జయం శ్రీపాద పరమహంస పరివ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తరశత శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ అభయచరణారవింద భక్తివేదాంత గోస్వామి మహారాజ్ శీల ప్రభుపాదకి జయం. నిత్రిలా ప్రవిష్ట ఓం విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరివ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తరశత శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహారాజ్ శీల ప్రభుపాదకి అనందకోటి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శ్రీ హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి ప్రేమసహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్తవృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గోప గోపినాథ శ్యామకుండ రాధాకుండ గిరి గోవర్ధానికి బృందావన్ ధామ్కి మాయాపూర్ ధామ్కి మధురపురి ధామ్కి జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామ్కి ద్వారకాపురి ధామ్కి గంగమాయికి యమునమాయికి తులసీదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్తవృందకి గౌర్ ప్రేమనింది. ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ శ్రీ గురు అండ్ శ్రీ గౌరాంగ, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శీల ప్రభుపాద. నమామి శ్రీపదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ భూదలే శ్రీమతి భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామి దినామిని నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవం గౌరవాణి ప్రజారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణే. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. సంసార సాగరే మగ్నం దీనం మాం కరుణానిధే కర్మగ్రాహ గృహీతాంగం మాముద్ధర భవార్ణవ. శ్రీమద్భాగవతాఖ్యోయం ప్రత్యక్ష కృష్ణమేవ హి స్వీకృతోసి మయా నాథ ముక్త్యర్థం భవసాగరే. మనోరథే మదీయోయం సఫలా సర్వదా త్వయా నిర్విఘ్నేనైవ కర్తవ్యం దాసోహం తవ కేశవ. భవే భవే యథా భక్తి పాదయోర్స్తవ జాయతే తథా కురుష్వ దేవేశ నాథస్త్వం నో యద ప్రభో. నామ సంకీర్తనం యస్య సర్వభావ ప్రణాశనం ప్రణామో దుఃఖ శమనం తం నమామి హరిం పరం. జన్మాద్యస్య యదోన్వయా ఇతరద అర్థేష్వభిజ్ఞస్వరాన్ తేనే బ్రహ్మ హృదయ ఆది కవయే ముహ్యంతియత్ సూరయం. తేజో వారిమృదం వినిమయో యత్ర త్రిసర్గో మృష ధామ్నా స్వేన సదా నిరస్తకుహకం సత్యం పరం ధీమహి. ధర్మ ప్రోజ్జిత కైదవోత్ర పరమో నిర్మత్సరాణాం సదా వేద్యం వాస్తవమత్ర వస్తు శివదం తాపత్రయోన్మూలనం. శ్రీమద్భాగవతే మహాముని కృతే కిం వా పరైరీశ్వర సద్యో హృద్యవరుధ్యదేత్ర కృతిభి శుశ్రూషుభి తక్షణాన్. నిగమకల్పదరోర్గలితం ఫలం శుకముఖాదమృతద్రవసంయుతం పిబదా భాగవతం రసమాలయం ముహురహో రసిగా భువి భావుకాః. సచిదానందరూపాయ విశ్వోత్పత్త్యాది హేతవే తాపత్రయ వినాశాయ శ్రీకృష్ణాయ వయం నమః. యం ప్రవ్రజందం అనుభేదమభేదకృత్యం ద్వైపాయనో విరహకాదరమజ్జుహావ పుత్రేది తన్మయదయత్తరవోభినేదు తం సర్వభూతహృదయం మునిం ఆనతోస్మి. యస్వానుభావమఖిల శ్రుతిసారమేకం అధ్యాత్మదీపం అతిథితీర్షదాం తమోంధం సంసారిణాం కరుణయాః పురాణగుహ్యం తం వ్యాససూనుం ఉపయామి గురుం మునీనాం. నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయే. కమనీయ కిశోరముగ్ధమూర్తే కలవేణుకుణితాదృదానందో మమ వాచి విజృంభదా మురారే మధురిం కనికాపి కాపికాపి. నమా ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణప్రస్థాయ భూతలే శ్రీమదే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామిన్ ఇతి నామినే. నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవిం గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశదారిణి శ్రీమల్ గురుచరణారవిందాభ్యాం నమః. వందే నందవ్రజ స్త్రీణం పాదరేణుమభీష్ణశ యాసాం హరికథోద్గీతం పునాతి భువనత్రయం గోపీచరణారవింద పరమానవే నమః. పీతాంబరం కరవిరాజిత చక్రశంఖం కౌమోదగీ సరసిజం కరుణాసముద్రం రాధాసహాయమతిసుందరమందహాసం వాతాళయేశమనిశం హృది భావయామి. కోమలం కూజయన్ వేణుం శ్యామళోయం కుమారక వేదవేద్యపరం బ్రహ్మ భాసదాం పురతో మమ. మూకం కరోతి వాచాలం పంగుం లంఘయతే గిరిం యల్కృపాతమహం వందే పరమానందమాధవం. శ్రీకృష్ణాయ నమః. శ్రీమతి రాధికాయే నమః. సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం గోవింద గోవింద. So, before we continue with Ekadasha Skandam, we will just discuss something about Srimad Bhagavatam. As we spoke about this before, from the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam you will find, which is expressed in two Puranas particularly. One, in Padma Puranam, there is glorification of Bhagavatam. Similarly, also in Skanda Puranam also, there is glorification of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, it is important to understand that Srimad Bhagavatam, although it is the essence of the all the Vedic literature, and it has come from Vedavyasa Maharshi after compiling all the Vedic literature, the Puranas still glorify about Bhagavatam. Padma Puranam and also Skanda Puranam talks about Srimad Bhagavatam and its glories in a very large scale. In the Padma Puranam, it is addressed what we sing as the prayers here in the classes, where we say that Krishna is Sachidanandam, isn't it? Satta Chitta Anandam. This is Sachidanandam. Sachidanandam. Krishna is addressed as Sachidanandam in Padma Puranam. In our prayers also we say, Sachidananda Rupaya Vishwalpatyadi Hedave Tapatraya Vinashaya Shri Krishnaya Vayam Nama. That's the prayer. In the Brahma Samhita, this prayer is Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. This is how the Krishna is addressed in Brahma Samhita. Same prayers is addressed in a different way in the Padma Puranam. Sachidananda Rubaya Vishwalpatyadi Hedave Tavatraya Vinashaya Shri Krishnaya Vayam Nama. So, this word Sachidanandam, how did this come to Krishna? We all know the meaning of word Satchidanandam, isn't it? Satta, Chitta, Anandam. These three words together, in English if you translate it is eternal. Satta means eternal. Chitta means full of knowledge. And Anandam means bliss, isn't it? Eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. These three titles are joined together and address Krishna in that way, Satchidanandam. So it's a very interesting reason behind why this name has been given to Krishna. Why this name has been given to Krishna. Satchidanandam, you will see this addressed in Krishna as Satchidananda Swarupam. Krishna Swami Satchidanandam. And this you will find in several other Puranas and Mahabharatam also. Satchidananda Swarupam is Krishna. Krishna Swami Satchidanandam. So why is Krishna called Satchidanandam? We have to ask that question, isn't it? Simply because we have told he is eternal, so we call him Sat. And because he is full of knowledge, it's not something has been given like that to Krishna in that way. There is a reason behind it. Why Krishna is addressed as Satchidanandam. If you know the reason, it can understand the depth of thought behind things in the Vedic philosophy. That there, Satya means, according to the Shastram, according to Bhagavatam also, particularly this world is has no reality. Reality in the sense, it has a temporary situation. This world's nature, by nature it is temporary. Now, because it's temporary, it remains for some time and it disappears. Afterwards it disappears. Maybe it is a very long period of time, but it doesn't have an eternal existence in that sense. It has an eternal existence in the sense. But when we come to this world, we experience some reality, eternity for this world, isn't it? We feel that there is something permanent in this world. Where did this feature come to this world? The reason for that is there is a Sat, or the essence of this behind this world, because of whose presence we feel the permanent nature of this world. The world its own has no permanent nature. The world is, in reality, it is a temporary thing. It manifests and unmanifested, and manifests and unmanifested. It goes on and again. Every time creation happens, it changes. So many brahmandams or universes are coming from Krishna. And in several brahmandam or several planets also. So this planet also, this creation also, what we see, apart from this planet, the whole creation itself is not permanent, but it is manifesting and unmanifesting. But we feel that there is a reality in this, because in this world, in this creation, by whose presence we feel the permanent existence of this world, that is called Satya. So it is Krishna is that Sat, by whose presence? Krishna is present in this world, in this whole creation, everywhere. And because of whose presence, we feel a permanent existence to this creation, therefore he is called a Sat. He is the Sat, or the essence of this whole creation. If Krishna was not there, this world has no existence. This world has no meaning. It is only due to Krishna's presence we feel the existence of this world as permanent, as it is existing, as we experience that this world is existing. So the Sat aspect of this world, or the Sat aspect of the whole creation, is coming from Krishna. Because Krishna is eternal, Krishna is Sat. And that Sat aspect is reflecting in this world, and because of that we feel the existence of this world. Therefore, he is called Sat. Similarly, the world if you take, you will also see here that there is knowledge in this world, isn't it? There is knowledge in this world. Why do we say there is knowledge in this world? Because without that knowledge working behind, this creation cannot go on the way it is carrying on. Just like so many planets are moving in an orbit. Some planets are circumambulating another planet. Earthly planet is circumambulating. So many planets are rotating on their own. So many arrangements in this world. The changes in the season that happens, how continuously on a regulated manner we get the different seasons. the sun's rise in the morning, sets in the evening, and the rain, and so many other things. And similarly, also when we when there is an order, in other words, there is an order in the whole creation, which you observe carefully, you can see. And that order in the creation is due to the knowledge behind it. There is somebody set up that system like that. Now, if this knowledge was not there in Krishna, we will not have this here in the world. We are experiencing in this creation a certain order, and that is due to the knowledge aspect of Krishna. Krishna's knowledge, Krishna is regulating behind. The system is engineered by Krishna. And Krishna runs the whole show with the knowledge behind him is Krishna. Therefore, the chit aspect or the knowledge aspect of Krishna is present in this world because it is present in Krishna. It is because of Krishna's presence that we experience this order in the world or this regulated system, how this whole creation is functioning. So you can see the sat aspect is coming from Krishna. The chit aspect also is coming from Krishna. Chit is nothing but the knowledge aspect. Thirdly, we know very well that this world is actually it's a source of distress to every living entity. That you know from Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna says, Anityam Asukham Lokam Imam Prapya Bhajasvam, that material world, all the whole creation is nothing but a place where it's full of misery and full of distress. In other words, it's full of distress. But in the middle of all this distress, we feel some happiness also. Although this happiness is coming through senses, which is not true happiness, the true happiness which is referred to in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita is a different thing altogether. But some happiness we are experiencing in this world, in worldly transactions and worldly life, some happiness we experience due to the presence of happiness in Krishna. It is because of Krishna's presence in this world that we experience some happiness in this world. You see, if Krishna was not there behind it, these qualities of Satta, Chitta and Anandam will not be experienced in this world either. We will not experience that in this world if it was not there in Krishna. And this is the reason why Krishna is addressed as Sachidanandam. So, Satta, Chitta and Anandam, Sachidanandam is Krishna. That's why it is said, Sachidananda Rupaya Vishwolpatyadi Hetave. Sachidananda Rupam, that is Krishna's Rupam, is Satta, Chitta, Anandam. Satta, Chitta, Anandam is Krishna's form. Sachidanandam is Krishna's form. That is the first thing. So, when Padma Puranam addresses the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, Padma Puranam begins with this, Sachidananda Rupaya. He says, Sachidananda Rupaya. Then what else? After that, Vishwolpatyadi Hetave. Vishwolpatyadi Hetave means three things. Ulpatti, that means how it has come into existence, the origin, how it was created. Ulpatti means how the creation happened. Vishwolpatyadi. Patyadi means creation, sustenance, and dissolution. Three things happens to this creation, isn't it? It is created, it stays for some time, and it gets dissolved. These three things are happening by whose presence? Again, by Krishna's presence. That is why it's called Vishwolpatyadi Hetave, for creation and then sustenance and dissolution. All these three things happen because it is because of the presence of Krishna behind it. In other words, everything is happening within Krishna. Krishna is the soul of the whole world. In other words, he is the soul, he is the living force within the whole creation. Within the whole creation, Krishna is present. And by whose presence all these activities happen, creation, sustenance and dissolution, therefore he is addressed as Vishwolpatyadi Hetave. Vishwolpatyadi Hetave. And what else? Tabatraya Vinashaya. Tabatraya Vinasham. What is Tabatrayam? Tabatrayam, you all know what it means. The three forms of material miseries. Isn't it? What are they? Adhyatmikam, Adidevikam and Adibhaudikam. The three forms of material distress everybody experiences in this world. Adhyatmikam, Adidevikam, Adibhaudikam. Adhyatmikam means that distress that is coming from within our own mind and body what distress we experience due to the presence of the mind and the body. That is adhyatmikam, everything that is created within the body. And then adi devikam means that it has been thrust upon us by the material nature. Just like, for example, floods, droughts, cyclones, earthquake, and things like that. Forest fire, big forest fire. These are coming by nobody's arrangement. It happens. We have no control on that situation. Those things happen because that is, they are called adi devikam. And the third one, which is called adi bhaudikam, is those which were forced upon us by other living entities, from the animals, from the birds, and from other individuals, like that, what we experience in this world. All the distress in this world can be classified into one of these three: adhyatmikam, adidevikam, adibhaudikam. Three classifications. Out of these three, the most difficult one is obviously the first one, adhyatmikam. Why it's given so much importance? Because when adhyatmikam is not correct, all adibhaudikam, adidevikam all get disturbed. Adhyatmikam is the most difficult distress in this world, which is coming from within, within the body and within the mind, or within the whole the bodily activities and mind and intelligence, everything. All over, we experience this distress. Therefore, it is called adhyatmikam. So, this adhyatmikam and adi bhaudikam is given the least importance in this. Adi bhaudikam is given the least importance. Because adi bhaudikam is considered to be the least troublesome than the adhyatmikam and adi devikam. Adhyatmikam and adi devikam, which is more difficult to control. So, Sachidananda Rupaya Kalpapuranam, this glorification of Bhagavatam begins like this. Sachidananda Rupaya Vishwalpatyadi Hedave Tapatraya Vinashaya Shri Krishnaya Vayam Numa. So first, the obeisances are offered to Krishna in this way. And after that, the next time, Sudha Goswami and Shaunak Rishi in their conversation. In Kalpapuranam also, the conversation is between Sudha Goswami and Shaunak Rishi. So when it came to that conversation, Shaunak Rishi asked the Sudha Goswami, before he began glorifying Bhagavatam, he recited the same words in the Srimad Bhagavatam. What is that? Yam pravrajandam anupetam apetakrityam dvaipayano virahakadaram ajuhava putredidanmaidaya taravobhinedu tam sarvabhudahridayam munim anatosmi. That. Exactly this verse in the Bhagavatam, Sudha Goswami spoke to the Shaunak Rishi while glorifying Bhagavatam. And here, it is addressed to whom? Addressed to the speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Who is speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam? Is Sukadeva Goswami or Sri Shukha Brahmarshi. He is addressed here. Shukha Brahmarshi is addressed here, or Sudha Goswami addressed here in this way. Yam pravrajandam anupetam apetakrityam. Why was it spoken like that? Normally, Sukadeva Goswami was born for Vedavyasa Maharshi after many, many, many years of severe penances. That's how Sukadeva Goswami was born. Now, when Sukadeva Goswami was born, immediately he had deep realizations within him. Realizations means, This is a very important subject. Normally, the system is, a child is sent to practice brahmacharyam for the first 20-25 years. He lives as a brahmachari. Then we have got what you know as grahastha ashramam, then vanaprastha ashramam, and then sannyasa ashram. This is the traditional arrangement in the varnashrama system. Now, during the brahmacharyam stage, one is expected to acquire sufficient knowledge of dharmam. What is dharmam and how to execute dharmam? So, learning that process is the time during the brahmacharya stage. Brahmacharyam process is meant for that. To find out what is dharmam. Because everything is based on dharmam, isn't it? Dharmam is the key word. So in order to understand what is dharmam and how to practice dharmam in this world, a brahmachari goes to, at an early age, say 7 or 8, he is sent to, after the Upanayanam ceremony, sent to the spiritual master's residence or Gurukulam, wherever he goes to, and then a long period of education for him as a brahmachari. At the end of that, he has what is known as samavartanam. Samavartanam is that permission from the spiritual master for the brahmachari to get married. And he comes, after the samavartanam, he comes, enters into grihastha-ashramam. So during the brahmacharyam stage, he studies the Vedas in such a way that he understands what is dharmam, how to execute dharmam. Dharma acharanam, that is the goal of brahmachari life. And what he has learned in the about dharmam in the brahmachari stage, he gets an opportunity to practice that in the grihastha ashramam. So grihastha ashramam is an opportunity where what he has learned in the brahmachari stage to practically apply in one's own life. For restricted way to enjoy the senses, at the same time, grihastha ashramam is executed in a dharmic way, so that what he learned in the brahmachari stage, he gets an opportunity to practice it. After that, he executes very severe penances, and what is known as the vanaprastham stage, where he executes severe penances, and the senses and the mind which did not get under control in the grihastha ashramam, he is expected to bring it under control by austerities and penances in the vanaprastha ashramam. And after that, he has come to that stage where he is almost in the close to the set of stage of realization of aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, that I am soul, I am free from this body. And he stays the rest of the time in sannyasa ashramam. In that stage, as aham brahmasmi stage in the sannyasa ashram, he comes to that perfection in aham brahmasmi before he leaves his body. So these 4 ashramams were created, brahmachari, grihastham, vanaprastham and sannyasam, in a very regulated way, so one gets an opportunity in one's life to go through this varnashramata system, and he is able to attain perfection in his life by simply following that. But for our Sukadeva Goswami's case, aham brahmasmi stage is the perfection, isn't it? Aham brahmasmi means I am Brahman. I am not this body, I am Brahman. That realization is complete within himself. Once that stage is reached, then when he leaves the body, he goes back to the spiritual world in whichever way it happens. That's another thing. But he gets released from the material existence once for all, does not have to come back to this world again to accept another material body. This is what is the Vedic tradition. So, Sukadeva Goswami's case, what happened was, at the time of birth itself, aham brahmasmi stage was there in him. Aham brahmasmi stage was already in him. This was one of the most amazing things what happened to Sukadeva Goswami. Obviously it has happened because from the previous lifetimes, this was very much in him, that he did not have to go through these 3 states of brahmachari, grihastha and vanaprastham to sannyasam. He did not have to do that for this reason. Because why do we go through all these things? Just like when we go through brahmachari life, what do? Generally, we'll go through the Vedic literature, Vedic philosophy, and Vedas, recitation of the Vedas, and execute the sacrifices. This is called the karmam. What the mantram we learn from the brahmachari life, and the brahmanas in the grihastha ashramam, we perform those sacrifices. That is the karmam involved in that. And we give up, and eventually we come to the vanaprastha stage and sannyasam like that. So karmam, karmagandam is a part of the grihastha ashramam. And this is executed in order to achieve jnanam, knowledge later on. But in our Sukadeva Goswami's case, he did not have to do that. Because already if the jnanam or the knowledge is already in the person, that aham brahmasmi had already been there in him, there was no need for him to execute the karma anymore. This is the reason, as soon as he came out from the, he came out and he grew up, he left the home. He left home and walked away from there. He left home and walked away from there. It was at that point, but for Vedavyasa Maharshi, up, even at this point, he had little attachment to his son. Because this son was born after a long period of penances and austerities by Vedavyas. So naturally, Vedavyasa Maharshi had some attachment to Sukadeva Goswami. So therefore, what happened was, when Sukadeva Goswami left home and started walking away from home without even mentioning one word to Vedavyas, Vedavyas kept calling him back. That putra putra, he was calling him, calling his son. But putra did not, son did not answer. Instead, all the trees and plants which were around, they started answering. What is the matter? They were asking. They were asking, the trees and the plants were replying to Vedavyas. When Vedavyas heard that, Vedavyas thought that this our son, my son is not an ordinary son. He is able to answer back through all the other bodies, other living entities to me. So naturally his position is quite different than mine. Vedavyas realizes that at that point. And that, keeping that in mind, Suta Goswami says here to our Shaunagarashi that yam pravrajandam anupetam apetakrityam. He has nothing to perform in this world, no responsibility, no duty is to be performed here. Anupetam apetakrityam dvaibayano virahakadaram ajuhava. Virahakadaram ajuhava. Out of feeling tremendous separation, Vedavyasa Maharshi is calling Sukadeva Goswami. Virahakadaram ajuhava. When he realizes that Sarvabhuda Hridayam is, Sarvabhuda Hridayam means his presence in everyone. Shuga Brahmarshi or Sukadeva Goswami's presence in all the living entities. He was present. How could this happen? This is something we have to understand. These are very, very logically explained in the Bhagavatam also and the Padmapuranam also. You will see this very systematically explained so that we don't take just as stories all these things. These are not stories. These are the facts or the science of self-realization, spiritual realization. As we keep on hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, you will understand that Bhagavatam is not spoken to tell us some stories what happened 5,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago. Bhagavatam is the science of the soul. And that science is explained throughout Padmapuranam also in the same way, just like in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, that the because Vedavyas had that strength in him, Shuka Brahmarshi, Sukadeva Goswami had such a firmness in knowledge and in the realization, he left home. Because once you have come to that stage, then there is no connection anywhere. Now generally, we know that we exist, the soul which is embodied, soul within this body, goes what is known as avasthatrayam. Avasthatrayam means the three states of existence, isn't it? Jagrat or the vacant state and the dream state and the deep sleep, the three states of existence. And the soul has only one option. It can move back and forth within these three states. It cannot get out of it. Just like sometimes you see a tiger in a cage in the zoo, a long cage. He walks back and forth, isn't it? He walks back and forth because he is caged inside. So, but for the visitors who are seeing the cage,
they've got sections, two or three sections. You can see him in one part of the cage, next time in the second part and the third part. Like this is back and forth, sometimes he walks. The lions, tigers, all of them do that. When they get bored, they keep walking back and forth. They want freedom, but they don't have the freedom. They are imprisoned or they're caged in that long, big cage. So, here, in the living entity or the soul also is caged in the same way. Only thing, we are not conscious of that. That's all it is. The cage is like this. Jagrada, Sopnam, Sushupti. Back to Sopnam, Jagrada. Sopnam, Sushupti. Sopnam, Jagrada. In this way, back and forth, the soul is moving up and down within these three states. In all these three states, we are caged. We have no freedom to come out from that. Therefore, in the Shastra, it is spoken, Avastatrayam. Avastatrayam means these three states of existence. Avastatrayam. Bhagavatam also, we will see this. Jagal Sapna Sushuptimcha Nurto Gunavartaya Tasam Vilakshano Jiva Sakshitvena Vinishchida. Krishna will talk about this in the Ekadasham later. Jagal Sapna Sushuptimcha Nurto Gunavartaya. As soon as you are under the three modes of material nature, these three cages are there. Tasam Vilakshano Jiva Sakshitvena Vinishchida. Jiva is within that as a Sakshi moving up and down in that conditions. Therefore, in each of these three states, we have different identities, isn't it? We have different identities. While being in the vacant state, we identify with the body completely. When we say we identify with the body, it means the five senses are very active, very active. The five senses, which means the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the sense of touch. The senses of five senses of knowledge. The five senses of knowledge and activities related to through these five senses is what is our main business in the vacant state. Jagrat state, this is what we experience, these five senses. When we move on to the dream state, the senses comes to a halt, and then we move into another phase, which is the phase of the mind. Manomandalam, it is referred to as the mandalam, or the mind, of the mind. Somehow or the other, we do not take this very seriously, isn't it? Very seriously, we don't take it. We think, oh, we just had a dream, it's nothing much to think about it. But it is the most critical of all the three. Out of the Jagrat, Sopnam and Sushupti, this Jagrat, what you experience through the senses. In a similar way, in the state of the dream, your mind is involved. The senses are withdrawn, but the mind. In the Jagrat, the senses have expanded. In other words, the senses have expanded. In the dream state, the mind has expanded. The mind has expanded. And in the deep sleep, the ignorance has expanded. When we say expanded, it means that they predominate that particular phase in our existence. For example, in Jagrat state or in the vacant state, how our five senses are most prominent. And if you simply analyze our own daily life, you can see as soon as you wake up in the morning, immediately the eyes open, you start looking at things, isn't it? What's the next thing to do? And then the planning starts of how to clean the body, keep the body fit, or whatever other things are involved. Especially those who are not interested in any spiritual activities. For them, it's simply bodily maintenance throughout the day. Mm-hmm. Even for those who are absorbed in some spiritual life, they also have to execute a lot of other activities to maintain the body, dress the body, feed the body, and all other maintenance required for the body. So somehow or the other, The senses are the ones which are active in the Jagrat state. Senses are active in the Jagrat state. So, when you come to the dream state, although the senses stops its activities, a big world develops there in the form of mind. Why it is a big world? Because it is from here that a lot of activities are originating from, that we are not conscious of. For example, material world we experience a lot of distress, dukkham. Dukkham it is called, isn't it? Sukha dukkham. That dukkham is coming from the material activities. Dukkham, why does distress come to us? Because of our sinful activities, dushpravarti. Dushpravarti or sinful activities is the cause of distress. That is, all shastram agree on this point. Why do we experience distress? Distress come from sinful activities. Why does the sinful activities happen to us? Why does the sinful activities happen to us? Because of the strong vasanas inside, which is known as durvasana. So, durvasana results in the form of dushpravarti. Dushpravarti develops into the form of dukkham or distress. This is how shastras define this. So, this durvasanas, how did they come from? Where did they originate from? That has originated because of our purva karma. Whatever karma we have executed before in several lifetimes, those every single karma has created a certain vasana inside. Vasanas are more subtle than memory. Memory is called orma. Orma is the memory. Vasanas are much more subtle than memory. Vasanas we can't easily identify them. But in memory, it stays there. This vasana stays in the form of memory. We won't know the vasanas till we... That is why sometimes we don't want to do certain things, but we do it still. And later on, regret about this. Why did I do that? Isn't it? It happens, most of us. Unless he's a very perfect sage who has such a total control on the mind. This happens to ordinary people, most of us. It happens. We do something and then we think, why did I do that? I shouldn't have done that. This feeling comes. Why? Because the vasanas, which are much more stronger in us, has pushed us to do that particular thing even before you could apply and justify it or find any reason behind it. So, the important thing is, purva vasana or purva karma or previous karma has created vasanas inside. And that vasanas have got developed into durvasana, which are bad vasanas in us. And that has developed into dushpravarti or bad activities. And from that, it has developed into distress in us. So this is how that cycle works. So here, what we have to remember here is, mind is nothing but repository of all these vasanas inside. Vasanas inside. It is what is known as, in general terms, it is referred to as Andhakaranam. In Shastram, it's called as the internal body. This gross body is the external body. There is another body inside which is known as Andhakaranam. Andhakaranam means the combination of four things. What are they? The mind, intelligence, false ego, and chittam. Four things. The combination of all these four is called the subtle body inside. Out of this, they are classified into mind, intelligence, false ego due to their particular activity. That's all. In reality, it is one and the same. But whatever it is, there a new world opens and this mind develops into a big thing. And it is from there so many other things happen. And this chittavati begins very strongly. And in the sapnam stage, what we are experiencing is that we have no freedom to come out of it. We have no freedom to come out of it. So, in the process of self-realization, we have to get out of this Jagrat state because of the presence of these senses. And the only way to free yourself from the influence of Jagrat state, you have to free yourself from the control of from the senses. So, if Jagrat state, if the soul has to free itself, the body has to be released, or body has to be freed, or in other words, freed from the influence of the senses. So, escaping from Jagrat state means, for the soul is concerned, the important factor there is how to free itself from the control of the senses. And that is why in the Bhagavatam it is mentioned that Vairagyam. Vairagyam is that stage which is necessary to free oneself from the Jagrat state. If you remember, so many times in Bhagavatam this is mentioned repeatedly. What is the purpose of spiritual life? It says there, bhakti, jnanam, vairagyam, knowledge, renunciation and devotion. All these three are also related to our three states of existence. Vairagyam is that state, renunciation is important because it is through renunciation one acquires the strength to free oneself from the influence of the senses. So when through very rigorous practice of renunciation, when one frees oneself from the influence of the senses, you can say he has developed proper vairagyam. And the next stage is the influence of the mind, which is in the dream state. So in order to free oneself from the dream state, Shastras are saying to us, bhakti is the process whereby the mind gets dissolved. The influence of the mind is so strong, we can't even know where to control him, and therefore it becomes the most difficult thing. And therefore, out of the bhakti, jnanam and vairagyam, bhakti helps maximum, bhakti is able to help us in the process of controlling the mind. So a soul which has freed itself from Jagrat, freed itself from the senses, he has escaped from the Jagrat. A soul which has freed himself from the influence of the influence of the mind, he has developed bhakti. So both mind and the senses are no more, or other words, these two entities completely disappears as soon as bhakti and vairagyam happens to a person. Bhakti and vairagyam is for this reason it is spoken. In the dream state, that big thing called mind, which is influencing us heavily and which is also indirectly a cause of so many other problems, what happens to us in the Jagrat state? In Jagrat state, what is happening is the senses expands through the mind. The expansion of the senses happens through the mind. Similarly, in the dream state, the mind expands itself. But when you have crossed all these two stages, you reach the third stage, what is known as Sushupti. And Sushupti also, or deep sleep also, is not a liberated state. Even when you come to Sushupti states, that deep ignorance is present in us. And tamogunam in the form of avidya. So, in order to free oneself from that Sushupti, what is knowledge is required, jnanam. Jnanam is required. That is why jnanam, bhakti, vairagyam corresponds to Sushupti, Swapnam and Jagrat state. Jnanam is that state whereby one is completely freed from avidya. And similarly, in the dream state, one gets completely released from the mind due to the presence of bhakti. And due to the presence of vairagyam, one gets completely freed from the Jagrat state. When one is released from all these three states, Srimad Bhagavatam is saying, Muktir hityakta anyadha rupam swarupenam vyavasthiti. Swarupam, he comes to his swarupam, his own real nature as the soul. The realization of the self comes to him when he is freed himself from these three states of Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti states. That is how Bhagavatam's definition of Mukti. Mukti means liberation. As far as liberation is concerned, we are discussing Ekadasha Skandam. Ekadasha Skandam, another name for Ekadasha Skandam is Mukti Skandam, or the canto related to liberation, isn't it? So, Mukti Skandam is coming from this. that freeing oneself from these three states of existence of Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti and goes into the, freed from all of this, he comes to his spiritual platform as the spirit soul, Aham Brahmasmi stage. That is when that happens. Then, so in the Bhagavatam, if you look in the first canto itself, you will see there that vadandida tattvidam tattvayajnanam advayam brahmedi paramatmedi bhagavan iti shabdyade. This is a famous verse in the second chapter, isn't it? So in that second chapter where this was spoken, vadandi tat tattvavidam, tattvavid means one who knows the truth. And they talk about the tattvam. Tattvam means the truth. What is the truth? Truth is Krishna. Krishna is the truth. And therefore Krishna is addressed as the truth. And vadandi tat tattvavidam, what do they say? Tattvam jnanam advayam. That truth which is jnanam advayam. That truth which is free from all other faults and it is one without a second. Absolute truth, in other words. The absolute truth is referred to by the transcendentalists in three forms, in three ways. Brahmedi, Paramatmedi, Bhagavan, iti shabdyade. Those who have devotees, they address the same truth as Bhagavan. Those who are yogis, they address the truth as Paramatma. And those jnanis, they address the truth as Brahman. That's the only thing, difference between the three. The same truth is addressed by transcendentalists in three different ways. Jnanis address it as Brahman, yogis address it as Paramatma, and the devotees address him as Bhagavan. But it is one and the same thing. So, when we go through Bhagavatam, you will see here that the when one comes to, this is important, when one comes to the realized state, what happens to that person? Normally, in the conditioned state, while we are in the bodily concept of life, we see all other living entities in the form of bodies only, isn't it? Sharira Bhavam it is called. Through body, you see all other bodies. If you are wearing the glasses of the body, or in other words, if your vision is through the body and bodily identity, you will identify all other living entities as body. All the living entities as body. If you see or if you identify yourself as jiva, as the conditioned soul, then you will see all other living entities as conditioned soul. It all depends on your own vision, how you visualize other things. When I say when you see somebody, what it means is, it's not just what you see with the naked eye. Naked eye is what is related to the body, isn't it? So through the naked eye, when you see others, you see everyone as a body. When you consider yourself, when you identify yourself with the body, you see others as bodies. When you identify yourself as with the jiva, you see others also as jiva. Others also as jiva. What is jiva and what is atma? Let's get understanding also clear. In the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, you will find the statement. Lord Shiva, in his glorification of Krishna, talking about this. Krishna enters into every body as witness of all the activities as the super soul. Krishna enters into every body as the super soul and as a witness of all the activities. Krishna enters into every body again as jiva and experiences the karma in this body. That is us, the part and parcel of Krishna who has come to this body and exists here as jiva. Both are Krishna has entered here as jiva, entered there as the entered otherwise as the super soul. So as Paramatma he entered, as Jivatma also he has entered into this individual bodies. The Paramatma which is present in all the living entities, he is one. Super soul is one. He is present. There is no separate super soul for everyone. So only one super soul, because it is through that super soul, it is connected with Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is conscious of everything, what goes on in everyone, through his presence as super soul in everyone. Now, when we see all other living entities as jiva, that I have come out of the bodily identity, but as jiva, nature, I will still see the differences in everyone as jiva. But the moment we come out of jiva to the platform of atma, and purely the platform of atma, then you will know that there is there is the super souls present in this creation as the one soul. Sukadeva Goswami has come to that stage. This was the reason when, as soon as he did not reply Vedavyasa Maharshi, and when Vedavyasa Maharshi heard the answer coming from the trees, immediately Vedavyasa Maharshi sensed that the bodily identity has gone, the jiva bhavam or the conditioned soul identity has gone, he has come to the topmost platform of atma or aham brahmasmi. And because it is one, Sukadeva Goswami could enter into any body and speak through that body. This is Sukadeva Goswami's special position. Imagine how elevated he was at the time of birth itself. At the time of birth itself, he could speak through others. He didn't have to answer himself. If he wants to speak through someone else, he could speak through them. Because he has come to that platform of atma, not as shariram, not as the body, not as jiva, but purely on the atma stage, super soul state. So therefore, Sukadevamaharshi, when he had to answer Vedavyasa Maharshi's call, Putra Putra, when he was calling, trees were answering on behalf of Sukadeva Goswami. And this shocked Vedavyasa Maharshi. Even he himself hasn't reached that stage yet at that time. This is the beauty of, that is why Sukadeva Goswami is respected so much. One who has reached that state of consciousness at the time of birth is something to be very admired. We are all trying for that, to get that stage. We are not even reached the stage of jiva. What to talk about the stage of atma? That's where we are. We are very much completely convinced we are this body, and we are very busy with this body throughout life. And if we can manage to get to the state of jiva itself, it's considered to be a great success. But we haven't even got there. We are still here in the bodily level. So whatever it is, imagine where Sukadeva Goswami is talking from. What state he is talking to Parikshit Maharaj. And therefore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, whatever Sukadeva Goswami has spoken, there is no necessity to question that. Because he is in that state, he is talking to us from the stage of Atma, super soul state. He is situated there. He doesn't have to come down anymore. If it is like that, why did Sukadeva Goswami study Srimad Bhagavatam? This was the question which Shravanagarishi asked Sukadeva Goswami. One who has reached that stage, because purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam was to come to that state, to come to the state of Aham Brahmasmi, that to realize the truth, what he is. So naturally, this question came up in the mind of Shravanagarishi. Shravanagarishi asked Sukadeva Goswami, why is that our Sukadeva Goswami has taken Srimad Bhagavatam? Why Sukadeva Goswami has taken Srimad Bhagavatam? When this question came up from there, all these things, the proof is there in the Bhagavatam. If you look into the second canto, the chapter, first chapter itself, it says there that the, in the second chapter, you will see there, in the second chapter, second chapter, the verse number 9, where he says, Paridishto binair gunya uttama shloka leelaya grihita cheta rajarshe akhyanam yadadhithavan. He says here, Paridishto binair gunyam. Although he was situated in the Brahman platform, Aham Brahmasmi stage, I was nairgunyam uttama shloka leelaya. I was captivated by Supreme Krishna's pastimes, he says. Uttama shloka leelaya. Grihita cheda rajarshe. My dear king, I was attracted by Krishna's pastimes. Akhyanam yad adhithavan. Then, therefore, I decided to take Srimad Bhagavatam in the hand, he says. Now, when Sukadeva Goswami is saying this, we also have to understand what is Sukadeva Goswami telling us. You are you may think, oh, Sukadeva Goswami is telling us that, oh, he liked the stories in the Bhagavatam so much. Like when we get a nice storybook, how we get attracted to it like that. Sukadeva Goswami thought Bhagavatam is a nice storybook. So that's what attracted him. No, it's not like that. What he found in the Srimad Bhagavatam, what Sukadeva Goswami realized in the Srimad Bhagavatam was, the absolute truths and the absolute truths, the pastimes of the absolute truth. Only one who has realized the absolute truth can understand the pastimes of the absolute truth. When he saw Krishna's pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and when he understood those pastimes, what he heard from his father, when he heard from his father pastime, Krishna's pastimes, and the spiritual purport of all these activities which Krishna, Supreme Personality, has executed in this world for the benefit of the living entities, Sukadeva Goswami was totally affected by that. Totally affected by that. Only when we understand Bhagavatam like the way Sukadeva Goswami understood Bhagavatam, we will also appreciate what Sukadeva Goswami was talking about. He was just not talking about, I heard all the stories, it's very nice stories, and he went back. No, it's not like that. Parikshito abhi nairgunyam, he says, I was not looking for something. I was already in that blissful state of the liberated state of Brahmasmi stage. Aham Brahmasmi. Uttama shloka leelaya. But Uttama shloka as Krishna's pastimes has something very significance here. And that is why it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam like this, that normally we have this understanding in our mind. I am a person. Krishna is a person. So because of that, I have a relationship with Krishna, and such people are called bhaktas. And or the knowing the force or the supreme truth or absolute truth as a person and relating with him on a personal level, he is referred to as bhakta, generally by the people. People think like that, isn't it? Generally, that's how most of our understanding is. That we see absolute truth as a person like us, and I relate with him as a person, therefore I am a bhakta. And those who are seeing the absolute truth in everyone as a living force, or the chaitanyam, or the living force chaitanyam in everyone as a living force, he is called a jnani. This is our general understanding. But strictly speaking, there is not practically any difference between a jnani and a bhakta. From the Bhagavatam point of view, it is like that. This jnani and bhakta, this is a common belief among the people, is like this. That seeing Krishna as a person, and I develop a relationship with him, and that is called generally as bhakti. But jnanis are those, these are devotees. Devotees are those who relate with Krishna as a person, and developing a relationship in that way with Krishna is a bhakta or a devotee. And jnanis are those who develop a relationship with, who sees Krishna's presence in other living entities. And seeing that living force in everyone, everything in the whole creation, he is jnani. This is how we generally perceive it. But strictly speaking, jnani and bhakta is not different. Jnani is the person who is actually seeing Krishna's presence in every living entity, and also recognizing that fact and conscious of that all the time, that Krishna is present in every living entity. Bhakta is that person, actually devotee is that person, who is actually tasting that relationship in everyone, as Krishna's presence in everybody. That is real bhakti. That's why, if you look into Bhagavatam, in the Nimi Navayogi Samvadam, when the discussion between Nimi and Navayogis happens, the nine yogis and the Nimi, King Nimi happens, there the definition very clearly talks about this. Sarva bhudeshu yappashyel bhagavad bhavam atmana bhudani bhagavatyesha savai bhagavadottama. Bhagavadottama means one is the pure first class devotee. Is that devotee edani bhagavatyesha, who is seeing Krishna in all the living entities. He is not the person who is individually cultivating the relationship with Krishna, But on the other hand, who is seeing Krishna's presence in everything, in everything. When we comes to a bhakta stage, in the mundane level, when we talk about bhakta, we think, oh, it's a devotee, he goes to the temple every day, and he only associates with the devotees, all other useless karmis, kill them all and punish them and throw them out. This is the very, very basic beginning of the bhakti stage. It is not the perfection of bhakti. Because he's not associating with karmis, doesn't mean that he is a pure bhakti. This is misunderstand. This is the mundane level we understand things. Bhagavatam is not certifying that. Bhagavatam certification is like this. Sarvabhudeshu yapashyel. Sarvabhudeshu. Not only in the other human society, including the birds, plants, bees, in everyone. Bhagavad bhavam alpana. Seeing Krishna bhavam in there. Bhagavad bhavam. Krishna's presence in other living entity. Bhudani bhagavat yesha. Similarly, all other living entities within him also, within oneself, that all other living entities has a connection with me because we are all part of Krishna. In other words, Bhudani Bhagavatyesha Savai Bhagavadottama, he is the first class devotee. So we have to correct our misunderstanding within ourselves. That I call myself as a devotee because I go to the temple every morning and spend some time only with the devotees, not with anybody else. I go home thinking that I've been with the devotees. That's misunderstanding. That's not Bhagavatam's definition. Great, great acharyas have certified this. They see it in a different way. Normally we consider like this, isn't it? We consider that, only certain places are holy in this world. Only Vrindavanam, Mayapur, Dwaraka, they are the places only to be worshipped. All other places, useless places. They are all to be rejected. One Acharya spoke about this very nicely. He says to Krishna, I have committed three offenses to you. Three of serious offenses I have committed to you. What are they? You who is present in the whole creation, all over. By your presence this whole creation is happening. But I have rejected all that and I have limited yourself to this form only. I'm only accepting this form, nothing else. I've rejected you, everything else. Although they have all come from you, and that was my first offense to you. It's an offense to think like that, to think about Krishna in that way. That Krishna is only in the temple, nowhere else. Where else do I look for Krishna? So to begin with, the first offense I have committed like this. Secondly, I have committed another serious offense. Your glories, nobody can describe. Krishna's glories, who can describe? Nobody can. Even Lord Balaram has tried to describe Krishna's glories. He could not complete describing Krishna's glories. And what have I done? I have tried to describe your glories in my limited tongue. That is the second offense I have committed to you, he says. So the first offense, the whole creation, everything what we see in this world is nothing but Krishna. Krishna's presence is in everything. I have ignored all that and I started thinking you are only in the temple, in the deity. That's the first offense I have committed. Secondly, I have committed this offense. Your glories, nobody can glorify you. You are beyond anyone's capacity to glorify Krishna. Who can glorify Krishna? This whole creation, millions and millions of universes. And Brahmandam is coming, going, coming back and forth. Lord Brahma is saying this. Brahma says, I can't describe this. And we, through our little capacity, we are trying to glorify Krishna. This is the second offense I have committed to you. And thirdly, another serious offense I have committed. I have always absorbed thought in my mind that you are only present in these places, Tirthasthanam, in different Tirthas. Like we say, I went to Vrindavan, that's the only place where I find Krishna, nowhere else Krishna doesn't exist. We come back and report to everybody, isn't it? So this is another offense to Krishna. To think that Krishna is only in Vrindavan, or Krishna is only in Mayapur, Krishna is only in Dwaraka, it's the biggest blunder to think like that. So that itself is the biggest mistake. All these three offenses I have committed to you. That's what the Acharya's statement to Krishna. So in our limited state, in our limited consciousness, we begin with all these things. Begin with Dwaraka, begin with Vrindavanam, begin with temple, begin with devotees. But that is a very, very basic stage of spiritual life where we begin with. And if we keep on talking about this, and this is the perfection of spiritual life, we will not move very far from there. സർവഭൂതേഷു യപ്പശ്യേൽ ഭഗവത് ഭാവമാത്മനാം ഭൂതാനി ഭഗവത്തേഷ സവൈ ഭാഗവതോത്തമാഹ. ഭാഗവതോത്തമം, വൺ ഹു ഹാസ് പെർഫെക്റ്റഡ് ഹിസ് ഭാഗവതം കോൺഷ്യസ്നെസ്, സ്പിരിച്വൽ കോൺഷ്യസ്നെസ്, ഈസ് ദാറ്റ് പേഴ്സൺ. കൃഷ്ണ സെയ്സ് വൺ ഹാസ് കം ടു ദി സ്റ്റേജ് വെയർ ഹി സീസ് ദിസ് ലിവിംഗ് ഫോഴ്സ് ഇൻ ഓൾ ലിവിംഗ് എൻറ്റിറ്റീസ്, ഇൻ ഓൾ ലിവിംഗ് എൻറ്റിറ്റീസ്. ദാറ്റ് വാസുദേവേ ഭഗവതി ഭഗവത് ഭക്തിയോജിതം ജനയത്യാശു വൈരാഗ്യം ജ്ഞാനം ചയത ഹൈതുകം. If you look into Bhagavatam, you will see this. Janavad Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayadi Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayada Haidugam. That Vasudeva, this whole process of Bhakti, Jnanam, Vairagyam, all these things comes automatically, Bhagavatam says, by Bhakti, Bhakti process. Vasudeva Bhagavati, one who has Bhakti towards Krishna. Vasudeva Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojita, ഭക്തിയോഗം, ദ ബ്യൂട്ടി ഓഫ് ഭക്തിയോഗം ഈസ് ജനയതി ആശു വൈരാഗ്യം ജ്ഞാനം ചെയ്ത ഹൈതുകം. ദ ഓട്ടോമാറ്റിക്കലി ജ്ഞാനം ആൻഡ് വൈരാഗ്യം വിൽ കം ടു ദാറ്റ് പേഴ്സൺ ത്രൂ ഭക്തി. ബട്ട് ടു സീ കൃഷ്ണ ഇൻ ദിസ് വേ ഈസ് ഓൾസോ ടേക്സ് എ ലോങ് ലോങ് ടൈം ഇയേഴ്സ്. ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് വെയർ സാധന കംസ് ഇൻ, ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് വെയർ സാധന കംസ് ഇൻ. സാധന ഭക്തി ഈസ് ദാറ്റ് പ്രോസസ്. സാധന ത്രൂ ദ പ്രോസസ് ഓഫ് സാധന ഭക്തി, ചാൻറ്റിംഗ് ദ ഹോളി നെയിംസ് ഓഫ് കൃഷ്ണ, eventually vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojita janayatya ashu vairagyam jnanam chayada haidugam. That necessary knowledge and renunciation will come to that person naturally through the process of bhakti. This is Bhagavatam's statement in the first canto. That and the same thing you will see in the Bhagavad Gita also. What does Krishna says there? Yo mam pashyati sarvatra സർവം ച മൈ പശ്യതി. യോമാം പശ്യതി സർവത്ര, സീയിങ് മീ ഇൻ എവ്രി വൺ. സ്വമാം പശ്യതി സർവത്ര സർവം ച മൈ പശ്യതി ആൻഡ് എവ്രി വൺ ഇൻ മീ. ദിസ് ഈസ് ദാറ്റ് സ്റ്റേറ്റ് ഓഫ് റിയലൈസേഷൻ ഓഫ് ആത്മ, സ്റ്റേറ്റ് ഓഫ് ആത്മ. സോ വൺ ഹു ഹാസ് കം ടു ദാറ്റ് സ്റ്റേറ്റ് ഈസ് സുഖദേവ ഗോസ്വാമി. ദാറ്റ്സ് വാട്ട് ഹിയർ ദ ഇമ്പോർട്ടൻറ്റ് പോയിന്റ്. ഹി ഹാസ് കം ടു ദാറ്റ് സ്റ്റേറ്റ് ഓൾറെഡി, ദാറ്റ് ഹി ഈസ് നോട്ട് ഇൻ ദ ലെവൽ ലൈക്ക് വി ആർ ടോക്കിംഗ് അബൌട്ട് അവർ സെൽസ്. That he is not, he has gone beyond anything to come to the pure stage of Atma, Atma Bhavam, that he has come to that stage. That this what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra Sarvanjam Ai Pashyati, that verse, that's only talking about one thing, that seeing oneself within everyone and seeing everyone within oneself. Pashyati Sarvatra Sarvanjam Ai Pashyati, that verse. And this same principle is expanded in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is nothing but a commentary on Bhagavad Gita, a detailed, a much more elaborated commentary of the principles what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. So that's where it is coming from. So we saw before, when you have freed yourself from the control of the senses, you have escaped from Jagrat. When you have freed yourself from the control of the mind, you have escaped from the Swapnam stage. Similarly, when you have controlled your, freed yourself from avidya through knowledge, you have escaped from Sushupti also. So it is that stage, that when a realized personality, you will see that he has escaped from all these three to a very high degree. Very high degree. If he is still present in this world, in this body, you have to take it that there is a limited amount, very small amount of avidya in him. That's why he has not got out of the body completely. The degree of avidya, degree of ignorance in us is to a very high level. That's why we haven't even got a taste of it, what it is. But those who have realized it already, they have come to the state where the degree of ignorance is to a very small level within them. That's why they're still within the material body. Similarly, there is still mind in them, there is still senses in them. But in the Vyavahara Desha means while doing transactions within this world, what you will notice is they have no ownership in anything. There is no ownership in anything. For example, in the Bhagavatam, it is mentioned here that when Sukadeva Goswami came to this stage, when Surya Goswami came to this stage. Shaunaga Rishi asked Sudha Goswami that Sukadeva Goswami's stage, what stage does he get there? To what extent has he got there? Sudha Goswami replies that, Atmaramascha Munayo Nirgrandhapi Uru Krame Kurvandi Haidugim Bhaktim Ittam Buddha Guno Hari. Ittam Buddha Guno Hari. Krishna's glorifications. When they glorify Krishna, they are glorifying Krishna as the absolute truth. They are not glorifying like the way we glorify. As the absolute truth. Why? Atmaramascha Munayo. They are Atmaramas. Atmarama means one who is enjoying in the soul. Enjoying the soul. We will ask a question, how do you enjoy in the soul? Isn't it? That will be our question. Because for us, enjoyment means only one thing. What is that? Five senses. Whenever we get any kind of happiness in this world, it is these through five senses. Through these five senses. When we give up this totally, this enjoyment through these five senses, through Vairagyam, then we will think that this life is really hell. Where is any happiness in this world left after that? Is it not? Sudeva Goswami's position is Atmaramascha Munayam. Atmarama he is. He doesn't need senses to enjoy. He doesn't need the senses to enjoy. He doesn't need a mind to enjoy. He is enjoyment himself. He is. That's the difference. Avidya has gone completely inside. The ignorance, what we have in the Sushupti state, that's completely gone. The mind, which is in the dream state, has completely gone. And the enjoyment through the senses in the vacant state is also gone. And that is the state where Sukadeva Goswami is. Atmaramascha Munayo Nirgrandha abhi uru krame kurvandi haidugim bhaktim ittam buddha guno hari. Krishna's glories, understanding Krishna from that platform is different than understanding Krishna from our platform. Our platform, we try to bring Krishna down to our level, isn't it? That's what we normally do. We think that why did Krishna do like this, why did Krishna do like that? This is our we are logicizing Krishna's activities through our mind and our senses. And then it doesn't fit in with us, we brand Krishna in some way, we want to find some fault there. But Atmaramas, who are enjoying in the soul, they don't judge Krishna in that way. Atmaramascha Munayo Nirgrandhi Abhi Uru Krame. Nirgrandhi means this Grandhi has broken. We talked about this Grandhi inside, if you remember, Hriday Grandhi. That Grandhi is broken completely. Identification with the body is totally finished. With the body, with the mind, with the senses, with the friends, relatives, society, the world, the country, all identification, what we have is all broken. Nirgrandhi abhi uru krame kurvandi haidugim bhaktim. And at that stage, what is he doing? Simply experiencing bhakti in Krishna. Ittam buddha guno hari. Simply seeing Krishna's glories. And that glory is actually keeping him in this world, in that body still. Body is still there. And therefore, he is called, while living in the body, because he has more or less escaped from Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, he is still called Jivan Mukta. He is in the liberated state, he is Jivan Mukta still. And as soon as he leaves his last drop, shedding the body at the last minute, he is what is known as Videha Mukti. He is no more in the bodily existence here. And he's in the perfectly liberated state, goes back to the spiritual world, to his spiritual identity. So, as we understand Srimad Bhagavatam, you will see that Sukadeva Goswami's state of consciousness. He is not like us, where we have completely absorbed in the body and we are trying to find happiness within this body through the senses. Sukadeva Goswami has completely freed out of the senses, mind and the ignorance what is in the Sushupti, that's also gone. A person who has come to this state, he does not sleep. This is another important point. That's why these theoretical side of spiritual life, not to eat, not to sleep, not to engage in sensual activities, theoretically we understand, but it must be put into practice as well. And that's why it is important. Otherwise, what will happen is, if you constantly studying the theory and never puts anything into practice, we will turn out to be demons at the end. We'll become demons. Shastras are saying that. That it is important, as much as possible, in order to free oneself from the identification with the body. Basically, these three things are very much stressed. First of all, controlling the senses. It mentions, talks about eating particularly. But eating is not the only thing. When we talk about senses, we have to remember that. All activities related to senses must be minimized. All activities related to senses must be minimized. Because eating is the most powerful among all the five senses. It's not that, because I'm not eating, but I'm controlling my eating, but I want to go and watch the Wimbledon today, that I'm controlling my senses. That's not what it means. It means that all senses must be brought under control. And this should be practiced along with when we study Bhagavatam and understanding the principles, what is involved in spiritual life. And same thing with the, that is as far as the body is concerned, controlling the eating. And then comes controlling the sleep. The sleep is important because sleep is nothing but avidya. Avidya is taking a powerful influence on us. As much as one is freeing oneself from the influence of the body, and he has to be able to come out of the state of this avidya, sushupti state, where one is completely fallen into the effect of ignorance. If one has to sleep, one has to sleep for minimum necessary. But increasing sleeping means increasing avidya in a person, and for that person, it will be difficult for him to culture knowledge in him, to culture spiritual knowledge to manifest in that person. One cannot sleep for 10 or 12 hours in a day and start thinking that I will make progress in spiritual life. That's not going to happen. These things of eating, regulating the eating, sleeping, and the third thing, of course, the talking, is these three things, if it is controlled simultaneously while studying the Shastram, it will help to progress in spiritual life. But without doing these three things, if one keeps on studying Bhagavatam, just like a textbook we study in the university, without without caring for the necessary discipline necessary in life, if we do that, eventually we will turn out to be demons. And this is how demons are categorized. There were powerful demons who knows all the Shastra very well. Hiranyakashipu, perfect example. Kamsa, another example. Jarasandha, another example. They know Shastra better than us. They studied. And they spoke also. When Asti and Prapti came back to Jarasandha, his daughters, after Kamsa was killed, you should read what Kamsa says to them. Jarasandha says to his daughters. Full of Vedanta philosophy, Jarasandha is presenting to them. And telling them that don't worry, soul is eternal, everything is speaking. But what is the use? No faith in the Shastram. All spoken theoretically very well. So the same thing can happen to us. This is how we turn out to be demons. When we study and realize things, understand certain things, if we don't put that into practice, according to our capacity, it is a progressive thing. One has to regularly, constantly watch that. Eventually it will turn out that we'll lose the faith in the Shastram and we'll become demons. So here, there are many, many examples in the Puranas to talk about this. So that's only the difference, what happens between the demons and the devotees. So here, yam pravrajandam anubedam abedakrityam dvaipayano virahagadarama juhava putreididanmaidayattaravo abhinedu tam sarvabhudahdayam unimanadosmeem. That the one who is enjoying as a soul, within the soul, he is situated as Atma. Therefore it's referred to as Atma Rama Shchamani, Atma Rama. He is called Atma Rama. Those who are enjoying in the family as a family man, he is called Kudumba Rama. He is family Rama. And the other one who is busy in the soul is Atma Rama. So there are different kinds of Ramas in this world, and we obviously we don't have to say, including me, which Rama we are. So, Atma Ramascha Munayo Nargranda Abhivrukrame Kurvandi Aidugim Bhaktim Itam Budaguno Hari. So therefore, Jnani is that person that Krishna is saying in the Bhagavatam, it is said that Uttama Shloka is Krishna. The only way to come out of avidya is the state what we experience in the Sushupti. Sushupti state, it is avidya. Avidya has to be destroyed by the presence of knowledge, jnanam. Jnanam helps to come out of avidya. Or in other words, liberation from Sushupti comes from jnanam. Liberation from dream, sapnam, comes through bhakti. Liberation from jagrat comes through vairagyam. This is how generally it is spoken. Bhagavatam also says that Vasudeve Bhagavadi Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. If you develop bhakti towards Krishna, in due course, the necessary vairagyam and the necessary jnanam will also come. But bhakti in the way Bhagavatam has spoken, not the way we think about it. We have to practice bhakti in the way Srimad Bhagavatam has spoken. Only then that will happen. Bhagavatam, we will discuss that later. In the Bhagavatam, it is mentioned, Bhakti Yoga Prayojita, Bhakti Yoga Prayojanam. The benefit of Bhakti Yoga is Janayadi Ashu Vairagyam. Vairagyam will develop. You don't have to separately endeavor very hard for developing Vairagyam. That is a Bhagavatam's philosophy. That if Bhakti is strong inside, if the Bhakti is very strong inside, in a natural sequence, Vairagyam will come to that person. That means his desire for enjoying senses will totally go away from him. No more attraction for the sense enjoyment. The senses we spoke about, the five senses. That attachment and desire will naturally go away. Jane the Ashu Vairagyam. What else? Jnanam Cheda Haidugam. The Jnanam also, necessary knowledge that is necessary. In other words, the sleeping will go. No more sleeping after that. Nowadays, what do? We work hard. And in the night, oh, if I could sleep, a good sleep for 8 or 10 hours, we find great delight in that, isn't it? But for a self-realized person, a person who is looking for realizing the truth, he sees the other way. He's thinking, oh, if I can avoid sleeping, I'm very fortunate. That's how he thinks about the sleep. He thinks about the sleep. And a person who has come to that state, like Sukadeva Goswami's case, sleep is completely finished. Then eating is completely finished. Sense enjoyment, in other words, is completely finished. And there is no more mind in that person. There's no more mind connected with him. Mind is nothing but a continuous flow of thoughts for us, isn't it? So you can see, in spiritual life, these things are more important. We may sadhana anushtanam or sadhana bhakti is only to come to this understanding of spirituality. So spiritual life means basically seeing the subtle side of everything, the subtlety of all these things. As long as we are absorbed in the gross gross body all the time and trying to pamper this body by feeding food, good food, and trying to enjoy the senses in different ways, and still chanting Hare Krishna and thinking that I will go back to spiritual world in this way, it may not happen. Because these are things, and such a person, even after chanting the holy name for a long time, he will find that he is not making the necessary progress in that direction. Then that'll cause some distress later. So that's why it is said here that Atmaramas are those people who do not see this world separately from themselves. They see this world within themselves. The world, the whole world, creation, everything what they experience is as one. They see in that way. Then, if the mind has completely gone away, then there is no more thoughts coming to them. Isn't it? There is no more thoughts appearing to them. And similarly, if the ignorance has completely gone away from them, there is no more sleep in them. They cannot sleep anymore. So need to sleep anymore. Then similarly, If all the senses are closed down, shut up completely, then all the activities of the body will also stop. All the activities of the body will also stop. So these are the high states of consciousness of what is referred to as Atmarama. Atmarama munayo nirgrandhi abhivrukrame kurvandi ahaitukim bhaktim ittam bhudaguno harim. That Hari is Krishna seen from their level, which is totally different from the way we see Krishna. In Bhagavadam, there are so many different topics discussed. You see Katha, the story part of it. Then you see glorifications at different places from great devotees. Then you also see lot of instructions in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Between the glorifications and the instructions, the thing that links between the two is the stories. Glorifications and the instructions in the Srimad Bhagavatam, these two things are linked through stories. In other words, stories were brought in to tell us those glorifications of, or the realizations of the great souls, and also instructions what Vedavyas and Sukadeva Goswami wanted to tell us. And that's linked together with stories. If the stories were not there, we wouldn't hear this. This is the reason why the stories have come there. That the pastimes of Krishna, they wanted to tell us these higher principles, so higher tattvam in there. Vadandida tattvavidam tattvayajnana madhvam. That tattvam's true nature. In order to present the true nature of the tattva or the absolute truth, Krishna has to go through these pastimes, and through that pastimes, Krishna has to educate us about that tattvam. That is the way to understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise, simply studying Bhagavatam from the principle of stories alone is not the important thing. That's why the glorifications are given a lot of importance for this reason. When you read the glorifications in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find that through glorifications you understand Krishna. Otherwise we cannot understand Krishna. We will misunderstand Krishna many ways because we are seeing Krishna from the bodily level. And when we are seeing Krishna from the bodily level, our tendency will be also to impose our limited vision on Krishna also. But those who have come to the spiritual level of Atma stage, like Sukadeva Goswami, they see Krishna in the proper way. They see Krishna in the proper way. That's why it is said like that, that glorifications are important. The instructions are important. It is through the glorifications or the realizations of these great devotees, beginning with Kunti Devi in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhishma Pitamaha, later on Bhishma Stuti, Kunti Stuti, Bhishma Stuti, Prahlada Stuti, Ambarisha Stuti, Dhruva Stuti. All these glorifications are put in for what purpose? The purpose is this: through Stuti, understand Krishna. Who is Krishna? After understanding that, then understand what is Krishna's activities. Before understanding Krishna, if we study the activities, what will happen? We will see Krishna as a person like us, one of us. And we'll start judging Krishna on that level. In order to avoid that mistake, glorifications are given a great importance in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Each and every glorification, when you study in the Bhagavatam, you will find that Krishna's absolute nature will be revealed to us. Vadandi tattvavidam tattvayajnanam advayam brahmedi paramatmedi bhagavan iti shabdyadeyam. In all these three levels, Krishna is understood. Krishna is understood. Brahma, Paramatma and Bhagavan. So, here, then, we have in the Padmapuranam, when glorification started, first, Suda Goswami glorified Krishna, saying, Sachidananda Rubai Vishwalpatyadi Hedave Tapatraya Vinashaya Shri Krishnaya Vayam Nama. In that way, glorified Krishna. Then he glorified his own spiritual master, who? Sukadeva Goswami. How did he glorify? Yam Pravrajandam Anubhedam Apetakrityam Dvaibhayinu Virahagadaram Ajjuhava Putrejidan Maidaya Taravobhinedu Tam Sarvabhuda Hridayam Unimana Tosmi. This is one instance where Sukadeva Goswami exhibited his presence in the whole creation. Everywhere he is present. when Sudha Goswami heard Srimad Bhagavatam while Sudeva Goswami was talking to Parikshit, all the sages who were present there, when Bhagavatam was finished, their desire increased to hear more Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is not this 18,000 verses what we see here. This is what we have got today. Bhagavatam is a much bigger thing than this. In the heavenly planets and Kailasam, Krishna's glories are spoken. Sri Parvati reads Srimad Bhagavatam and Lord Shiva listens to it. In Vaikuntham, Lakshmi Devi reads Srimad Bhagavatam and Mahavishnu listens to Bhagavatam. So there Bhagavatam is going on, and that Bhagavatam is not only this 18,000 verses. It's a much more, this is a very abridged edition of the original Srimad Bhagavatam. So here, what happened was that after glorifying Krishna and after glorifying Sudeva Goswami, Sudha Goswami started talking about the further about what happened in the Kali Yuga. When Sridharana Maharshi came here after Krishna's departure from this world, when Narada Maharshi came here, he got a shock in his life. He got a first shock in his life. Narada Maharshi confirms that in the Padma Puranam. He says there, when he came here, the first thing what he saw was, he saw people were selling food. And Narada Maharshi could not understand people were selling food. If Narada Maharshi comes here, I don't know what he will say today about this world. We probably will make Narada Maharshi also a businessman and send him back. We'll teach him how to do business. So that's what happened. He says here, Atashula Janapada. Padmavranam says like this. He says, Janapada, whole society was absorbed in doing business with food. Food is not something to be sold. As far as Krishna is concerned, Mother Earth is, through Mother Earth, Krishna is giving us the food. Krishna never told us you do business with food. It's considered to be one of the lowest thing to do, to sell food and to make a living out of it. Atashula Janapada. Shiva Shula Dujadinam. Next thing he saw was Brahmanas were selling spiritual knowledge and Vedas and making money out of it. So one by one, everything was, every time he was getting a shock. Narada Maharshi gets a shock when he comes here. When he sees the people's condition to live in this world, they had to sell food. And the most sublime literature in the whole world, the Vedic literature, like Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and so many other nectarian words related to self-realization given by Krishna to this world, people are selling that to make money. Atashula Janapada. So is there any wonder Narada Maharshi got a shock when he saw that? He understood how fallen the people were, the condition, the consciousness, how low it was. Atashula Janapada Shiva Shunyam Dujalina. The so-called Brahmanas, they were selling spiritual knowledge to make money. And every justification for that. So seeing all these things, Narada Maharshi was in a great shock. So that time, Sudha Goswami talks about that. He says here that Shaunaka Maharshi asked, Sudha Goswami says, when he was addressed there, our sages who are present in the Naimisharanyam, they asked this question to Sudeva Goswami, where will you hear Srimad Bhagavatam again? After hearing Bhagavatam from Sudeva Goswami, thousands of sages who are present in the Naimisharanyam, who were present in the Ganga River, banks of the river, they were asking this question, where we will hear Srimad Bhagavatam again? At that time, in one corner of the thousands of sages who are sitting there, our Sudha Goswami was also sitting there. Sukha Brahmarshi or Sudeva Goswami told everybody, those who want to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, they can go to Naimisharanyam. And that Sudhan who is sitting there, he will speak Srimad Bhagavatam there again, once again. And you can hear Bhagavatam from him. That was the answer from Sudeva Goswami. So, in Naimisharanyam, the great sages were performing the sacrifice there. And at that time, they were waiting for Sudha Goswami to arrive to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. So suddenly one morning Sudha Goswami walked in to that sacrifice. And there were so many things going on in the sacrifice. It was lasting 1,000 years. It says in the Bhagavatam, Sahasra Samamasada, 1,000 years this sacrifice lasted. It is in the middle of that, Sudha Goswami walks in. When Sudha Goswami walked in, all the sages who are present in Naimisharanyam, they address Sudha Goswami and welcomes him. As though they had the full information before, advanced information, that Sudha Goswami was going to arrive. And when Sudha Goswami arrived, you can see the way they welcomed him. They didn't ask him, where are you coming from? Oh, who are you? What's your name? I'll show your identity card or anything like that. They didn't ask such things. On the other hand, what did they say to him? They say to him, Yasyanubhavam akhila shruti saramegam Adhyatma deepam aditi tirshadam tamondham Samsarinam karunayaha puranaguhyam Tam vyasasunam upayami gurum muninam. The recognition of Sudha Goswami was like that. What is that? Yasvanubhavam akhila shruti saramegam. That Yasvanubhavam. Svanubhavam means his own individual experience of the realizations of the truth. And when the sages were present in Naimisharanyam, they addressed Sudha Goswami and said to him, please come, tell us about when can we start Srimad Bhagavatam. The way they welcomed Sudha Goswami was very moved by that welcome. They were waiting for him to see him. At that point, Sudha Goswami understood the power of Sukadeva Goswami. Why? Sukadeva Goswami was sitting in the heart of all the sages and speaking like that to him. Just like Sudeva Goswami spoke through the trees to Vedavyas. That's why it is said like that. That Sarvabhuda Hridayam Munim Anatosmi. Sarvabhuda Hridayam. He can enter into everyone's heart and speak through them. That is the special potency of Sukadeva Goswami. In two places you see this. Once in Naimisharanyam and the same thing in Badrinath when he left Vedavyasa Maharshi, Badrigashram. When he left Badrigashram, he exhibited this potency. And he again, the same potency he has shown when Sudha Goswami arrived in Naimisharanyam also. So, Yasvanubhavam akhila shrutisaram ekam Adhyatma deepam aditi tirshadam tamondham samsarinam. Now, here comes. When Sudha Goswami was asked by Shaunaka Rishi, why did Sudha Goswami study Srimad Bhagavatam? Although he has already reached that stage by studying Srimad Bhagavatam, what one has to attain? Aham Brahmasmi stage, he has already reached there. So then why did he study Srimad Bhagavatam? Samsarinam karunayaha puranaguhyam. This puranam, karunayaha puranaguhyam. He thought, if I study Srimad Bhagavatam, this beautiful Bhagavatam can help others. It will help others. So in order to help this world, only to those who are completely affected, conditioned by this material life and suffering in this material world, for our benefit, Sukadeva Goswami took Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise, Srimad Bhagavatam would not have come to us. And he would not have spoken to Parikshit. And thinking like that, Sukadeva Goswami was wandering around in that mood for a long period of time. How should I present this to the world, this Srimad Bhagavatam? It was then that, by Krishna's arrangement, all these things what happened to Parikshit. And Sukadeva Goswami, being present in everyone, could understand, here is the first person who should listen Bhagavatam, and he chose Parikshit to come and talk to. So, samsarinam karunayaha. Sudeva Goswami's compassion for us, for the souls, other conditioned souls. He says, purana guhyam tam vyasasunam. That's guhyam, most confidential puranam, Srimad Bhagavatam. He has decided to speak. Purana guhyam. Tam vyasa sunam upayami guram muninam. To that spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami, they were paying their obeisances in the Bhagavatam. So, here, having said this, here in the Padma Puranam glorifies Bhagavatam in this way. Padma Puranam brings out all these interesting aspects of the Srimad Bhagavatam very well. So there it is said here that Krishna says here that the that that having paid their obeisances to Krishna and to Sukadeva Goswami, a number of questions were asked by those sages, including Shaunaka Rishi, who was present there. What are the questions? Let's have a look at that. Shaunaka Uvacha.
Ajnanadvardavidvam sakkodi surya samaprabha sudakhya hi kathasaram mamakarna rasayanam.
That, tell us about those glorious pastimes of Krishna. Then the questions begin.
Bhakti jnana viraga apto vivego vardhade mahan maya moha nirasascha vaishnava kriyade katham.
How can the devotees of Krishna, that through bhakti, knowledge and renunciation, they will increase, they will come to their realized state and get escape from maya. Get escape from maya. This was the first question they were asking. Shaunaka Rishi has asked to Suda Goswami.
Bhakti jnana viraga apto vivego vardhade mahan maya moha nirashascha vaishnavai kriyade katham.
Then, second question.
Iha khore kalau prayo jivascha suradam gada klesha krandasya tasseiva shodhane kim parayanam.
Then, generally in this age of Kali, the living entities naturally take to a asuric nature, demoniac nature. How can we elevate such a conditioned soul, a jiva, who has taken to asuric nature? That was the second question.
Kleshakrandasya tasseiva shodhanekim parayanam.
How can we purify that person and come to his senses in this age of Kali? Third question.
Shreyasam yadbhave shreyal pavananam cha pavanam krishna praptikaram shashval sadhanam tadvathadhunam.
Then, what is to be executed, performed for the ultimate benefit? And also, how can one reach Krishna praptikaram? One can get back to Krishna. One can get back to Krishna. You have to always understand, whenever reference to Krishna, he also refers to self-realization in that way. Because Krishna is discussed in the Bhagavatam in that way. And everywhere you will find in the glorifications, whilst talking about Krishna, Prahlada Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, they all talk about Krishna's not only as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but also as Supreme Truth from whom everything has emanated.
Then, Chindamanir Loka Sukham Suryadra Surga Sambhadam Prayachari Guru Prido Vaigundam Yogi Durlabham.
Then, what is the way to go back to Vaikundam or to the spiritual world? That also please explain to us. So, all these questions were raised by Shaunaka Rishi to Suda Goswami. Let us look at that questions a little bit more in detail. That one of the questions was how to completely stop this durvasanas, the vasanas what is developing within us. Another question was how to purify the mind and go back to Krishna, Krishna praptikaram, it says here. And there also it is mentioned that the people in the age of Kali, particularly in these verses, he says here, so imagine there is a big python. And that python by nature, what does python do? Python swallows another living entity, isn't it? Big animals gets swallowed by python. So this python is a very frightening thing. Although it doesn't have poison, but it is very capable of, in the forest, you know, when the pythons are put into captivity, they have a lot of difficulty because pythons by size, they can expand and take the another living entity smaller than them and completely take them inside, swallow them very easily. And here in the Padma Puranam, someone who is frightened of a python, how he lives, suppose there's a python around us and ready to swallow us any time, what will be our situation? That is the situation in this age. Why? Because the word is used is Kalavyalam. Kalavyalam means the time is considered like a python. Why is it considered like a python? Because like a python, it is swallowing us one after the other. Isn't it? We are always getting swallowed by time. And that is what is called death. And this fear of death is in us. All of us have this fear of death. That when am I going to finish? When will this come to an end? Any time it can happen. We know from our practical life in this world that there is no guarantee for anything. So therefore, Kalavyalam Hagrasa Trasa Nirnasa Hedave, it says, that always living in this fear in this world of the fear of death, which is appearing in front of us in the form of a python. That is how the Padma Puranam refers to it. So when such a python is opened its mouth and standing in front of us, ready to close any moment, where can be any happiness in life? And that fear is always existing. Actually, this thing called death is an interesting process when it happens. We don't want to die. Strictly speaking, we don't want to die. All of us want to live. It is the whole thing is mixed up within us. We don't want to die. But then what happens? When the old age comes and different difficulties start developing within the body, when you find that you need external help to maintain this body, we become dependent on others for our maintaining ourselves. Similarly, when we lose the taste for enjoyment in this world, the senses are not cooperating anymore. So from all sides, everything is shutting down one after the other. Our ability to enjoy goes away because the senses are failing. Our ability to maintain ourselves, we lose, we become dependent on others. When these things are happening, we want to leave. We want to leave the body. But at the same time, somewhere inside, we also have the realization that we don't die. You see how the whole thing is mixed up inside. When death is approaching closer to us, when we get very old, 70, 80 at that time, as death is closer to us, we see all this complicated situation within ourselves. Sometimes we want to leave the body when we see that we have become a burden on others. That we need the help of others to maintain this body. Sometimes it can go to the extreme when somebody has to feed us, clothe us, and simply living in this world become a burden on so many other people, then we don't want to live in this body anymore. We want to leave. Similarly, even if we don't become not dependent on others, even if we simply has to enjoy life, there is no enjoyment in this world. Because eyes cannot see anymore anything. Even if you switch on the best channel in the television, it's just a blank screen, can't see properly. So there is nothing, television is not giving any happiness. As far as tongue is concerned, any food cooked in the best possible, no taste for it. Tongue is also given up. And somebody comes and tells you something, a nice music is coming, merely, what is he making this noise for? It comes to that level, it goes. One after the other, everything shuts down. All the senses shuts down. So that's all shutting down. And on the other hand, burden on so many other people. Then what do we think? When will this come to an end? Isn't it? That's when we think, when will it come to an end? But suppose at that time, we get back everything back to health again. Would you like to die then? We'll say no. We don't want to die. So that shows that death's desire for leaving has come only because of the frustration what we experience within this body. That is because of that. Not that we want to go. And we also are conscious somewhere inside this, because knowledge is inside in every one of us, that death doesn't happen to us. We don't die. This fact is inside. Somewhere somebody is reminding us from inside. The soul is telling us this. There is no such thing called death. And knowing very well, we are still fearful of death. In the middle of all this, we are fearful of death also. That hesitation to leave the body is there. So all these things are mixed up in our state at that time, at point in time. Also, it is then at that time, then suddenly we are forced to leave the body and go. And that is what is called a death, what we address as death in today. And so one who understands the soul, the science of the soul, he knows very well that we are eternal. We are eternal. This realization is there inside. Avidya is that what is covering us. When avidya goes away, that knowledge will come and death is no more a frightening experience anymore to that person. That is why it is said, while living within the body, one should endeavor to attain that status, so that you can leave this body in a pleasant state, without any fear. Whereas, if we have not removed that avidya or ignorance from us, and we have constantly absorbed in maintaining this body and thinking about this body and lived in fear, all of us are, even including the modern science, is only doing this one thing. They also want to live eternally. That is why all this research work is going on in the laboratory. They want to do it. They want to live forever. And that's why so much money is pumped in, so much energy is spent on this, how to live forever. How to live forever. That is science. Science is struggling for that. The only difference between the science and spiritual side is, spiritual life is, science wants to do it with this body. Spiritual life says, leave the body and come back. That's the only difference between the science and the spiritual life. Spiritual life is telling us, this body, you cannot be happy within this. It's not possible. This body belongs to material nature. It has its own limitations. The five, Krishna spoke about this in the Bhagavad Gita. Birth, death, old age and disease is a part of it, this body. You can't stop it. So, one who is in knowledge, he takes this seriously and takes these instructions from Krishna seriously and leave, not to worry about the body anymore. Those who have no understanding of this, they try and try and try again to live forever with the body. That is science. Science is after that, spiritual life is to leave the body here. Body belongs to material nature. Soul belongs to Krishna. That's the difference. Soul belongs to Krishna, body belongs to material nature. So once we accept that ourselves firmly inside, to devote a lot of time in maintaining this body and to make this body perfect will be foolishness. Will be foolishness. That is why it said, if you see here, what is Sukadeva Goswami was a doctor. What did he do to Parikshit? Parikshit was the person, patient. So patient was treated. And eventually, if you look at in the 12th canto, when Parikshit came out of the bodily concept of life, he looking back at his own body and saying how he got out of that bodily concept of life. Aham Brahma Param Dhamma, Brahma Aham Paramam Padam. I have reached that state. So Sudeva Goswami has taken him to the state of consciousness what he himself was in. That's what he has got there. So Aham Brahma Param Dhamma, Brahma Aham Paramam Padam. That Brahmaham state, I am become Brahmam. That Paramam Padam, the supreme state, I have reached. So by now, the body was lying there. Parikshit has left. So what Tatshaya has done was, Tatshaya has come and beaten that body and burned it into ashes. In other words, he saved the firewood for Janmejaya. That's all he has done. Janmejaya was Parikshit's son. So Parikshit had to, Janmejaya would have to probably burn this body and do all the sacrifice and other ceremonies after that. But Tatshaya has done a great favor to him by biting his body, and by biting Parikshit's body, it was already burned into ashes. He didn't have to burn this body again. So that service Tatshaya has done. But by now, Parikshit has gone away. He is not there in the body anymore. So this realization, what Parikshit has experienced in the Srimad Bhagavatam, has happened in 7 days' time by Sukadeva Goswami presenting the absolute truth to Parikshit. And you can also experience here that Parikshit seriousness in spiritual life. That's what is the most important thing here. Parikshit's qualities are expressed in the Bhagavatam. His name was, Brahmanas had given him the name as Vishnuradhan. Vishnuradhan was Parikshit's name. So Parikshit got this name as Vishnuradha. And as Vishnu Radha, while being in the womb of Uttaradevi, Parikshit was protected by Krishna. You all know that story. Parikshit, how Parikshit was protected by Krishna. When Ashwatthama sent this special Brahmashiras Astram to kill Parikshit Maharaj, Uttaradevi prayed to Krishna. And Krishna entered into the womb of Uttaradevi and protected Parikshit. And from that day onwards, Parikshit was inquiring, who has protected me in the womb? I saw that person, and when he came out, always he was looking for that person. So he got the name as Parikshit. That's how he got his name as Parikshit. And he lived a life, throughout his life was very much based on dharma. Parikshit was a great personality because were born in the family of Pandavas who were the great devotees of Krishna. Naturally, that mercy has come through Pandavas to Parikshit as well. So, Parikshit cannot do anything wrong. Everything what executed his life purely based on dharma. That was Parikshit's success. The only, one and the only mistake he did, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, is at the last minute when he took the dead snake and put it on the throat of the sage Shamik Rishi. That was the only slight mistake he has committed and for which he was repenting. That was the state of consciousness of the Parikshit. Now this Parikshit who has executed spiritual life in his all along, he decided to come and sit here and listen to Srimad Bhagavatam. He didn't think about Srimad Bhagavatam before he came. He was not even conscious of Srimad Bhagavatam when he came. But he decided, I will simply remember about Krishna and leave this body. That is the great devotee. He just wants to remember Krishna at the time of leaving the body. That's all Parikshit wanted. So many great sages who are present there, the names are listed in the Bhagavatam, you can read it. Different sages were proposing different things, what should be done to help Parikshit while leaving the body. But Parikshit says, I don't want to hear anything. I simply want to hear about Krishna, the absolute truth. And when Parikshit was in that state, he says, I was not interested in eating or sleeping or even drinking anything. And I'm not feeling fatigue. So conscious Parikshit was. And that was the reason why Sukadeva Goswami decided to speak Srimad Bhagavatam to him. Sukadeva Goswami didn't want a bunch of us like us who wants to sleep comfortably, wants to eat well. And he wanted someone who has come to that state of consciousness. That was Parikshit. And Parikshit talks about that, Sukadeva Goswami appreciates that. When such a person hears from Sukadeva Goswami, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami's words will not go in vain. It has its own effect also. That's why in 7 days' time, all this has happened. Sukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit heard Srimad Bhagavatam in 7 days' time, and at the end, he left his body and went back and realized the truth. Aham Brahma Param Dhamma, Brahma Aham Paramam Padam. Paramam Padam, that supreme destination, he arrived. That was the glory of Parikshit. So here, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while we are talking about this, is that the death is such a thing, as I mentioned before. Parikshit was 66 years old when he was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami. He was 66 years old. And not only that he has already given up all karma. Karma generally we execute for happiness in this material life. Laukika Sukham, isn't it? Material life. And we execute yagam or sacrifices for the benefit of the sacrifices for heavenly happiness, for happiness in the heavenly planets. So these two things Parikshit has already given up. He did not have any desire for happiness in this world. He did not have any desire. That's what it is showing, that he did not want to get involved in executing any sacrifices. In other words, he was a perfect candidate for liberation. Perfect candidate for liberation. So he has reached that state of consciousness that only such a person, when he hears Srimad Bhagavatam, it will have its impact on him. It will have its impact on him. Because that desire, the detachment and renunciation was perfect in Parikshit. Knowledge was perfect in Parikshit. He has freed himself from eating and sleeping problems. Avidya has gone away from him. At that point, when Sukadeva Goswami presented Srimad Bhagavatam to him, you can see the result coming from that. That is the greatness of Srimad Bhagavatam. So when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to keep all these things in the background. When we are not seeing the results, and we read Srimad Bhagavatam and reject Bhagavatam saying that, oh, Parikshit happened in 7 days, I have been reading 40 years, nothing has happened to me. We should not complain about it. We must also realize in what state of consciousness Parikshit was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is where Parikshit and Srimad Bhagavatam and friend from whom? A personality like Sudev Goswami, who has also in that same state speaking to Srimad Bhagavatam to him. So, when we hear Bhagavatam, when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, if we don't take those instructions and transform that into our own life, nothing will happen. We will be hearing Bhagavatam forever, but no change will happen in us. After 50 years of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we will ask the same question. What has happened? Nothing has happened. I'm still hearing the same story. That's no good. That's what I'm saying. That the in the next story you will see in the Padma Puranam what happened. Demigods came with the nectar. Because you have to remember what happened at the time when Parikshit left this body. Parikshit died after Tatsakya's bitten. Lord Brahma didn't know anything about this. Lord Brahma realized that Parikshit died because of Tatsakya. That's how Brahma saw that. So, normally such a death is called Durmaranam, isn't it? It's a death which is not normal. And when such a death happens, he finds that he should have become a ghost. Normal situation, when a death happens in unusual circumstances, through accidents and through murder or killing and things like that, because it hasn't finished its karma in that particular body, it has to accept a body in the ghostly form. Ghostly body it is referred to. So, Brahma's calculation was such, Parikshit should become a ghostly body. But it didn't happen to him. It didn't happen to him. And not only that, he also noticed that Parikshit has not executed any kind of spiritual life, practically. He was sitting there and listening to Srimad Bhagavatam from Sudev Goswami for 7 days. So, when Brahma noticed that, without executing any sadhana, he was not chanting 16 rounds or anything, nothing he was doing. He was just sitting and listening to Bhagavatam from Sudev Goswami, and he comes back to the spiritual world with Aham Brahmasmi realization. So, Brahma himself was in shock that how could this happen to Parikshit? So, he decided to find out. But prior to that, the demigods are also observing the same thing. So, demigods thought, this Srimad Bhagavatam is not a bad thing to have. After all, the demigods also want release from their life, because they know the life there is also not permanent. When that time is over, they also have to come down. But only thing is, it's a long period of time and a very high level of sense enjoyment. Eternally, you can't live there also. So, demigods also thought, perhaps we should think about getting Srimad Bhagavatam from Sudev Goswami. So, Sudev Goswami came to speak Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit. And when he sat down and when they saw that Parikshit had completely got liberated from this material life, from the cycle of birth and death, through Srimad Bhagavatam, they got interested. So what they thought, we'll go there to see Sudev Goswami and talk to him to hand over Bhagavatam to us. So when they came here, they took a bottle of nectar with them. Just like here also we do, isn't it? When businessmen, they go to see each other, they carry a bottle, only thing it's not nectar, something else. But here, demigods are equally good businessmen, don't get them wrong. They also know how to do business. So they came with this nectar and they came here and handed over this bottle to Sudev Goswami and tells him, take this bottle and give that Bhagavatam to us. This was the way they spoke to to personality like Sudev Goswami. Sudev Goswami heard and smiled at them. He just smiled. Why did he smile? 5 different reasons are given why he smiled when they saw these demigods. first thing was that demigods wanted to do business. He didn't like it. He thought, they are thinking that Srimad Bhagavatam is a subject for doing business. That's the way they are seeing Bhagavatam. It is another commodity, business commodity. We also sometimes think like that, isn't it? If we can make some money out of it, why not? So, this business mentality probably has come from demigods to us. We don't know where it came from. But this is how they started. They also wanted to do business with Srimad Bhagavatam, with Sukadeva Goswami. So they came here, they took a bottle and they gave it to and said, give us Srimad Bhagavatam. He smiled. First reason, this business mentality Sukadeva Goswami didn't appreciate very much. He thought that if they can't appreciate what Srimad Bhagavatam is, they are not qualified to have Bhagavatam. That was his first decision on that. First reason why he rejected the demigods. Secondly, demigods who have tremendous desire for sense enjoyment. They have not given up that. What they wanted was, they wanted to live, enjoy senses there, with the help of Bhagavatam, live eternally there. This was in their calculations. They were thinking, if Bhagavatam is helping us to remain permanently in the demigods, because Bhakti Jnana Viragena Bhagavatam says, Vairagyam is one qualification to hear Srimad Bhagavatam like Parikshit had. That qualification of Vairagyam has not even touched demigods anyway. Those who have come, obviously. They still wanted their Apsaras women, Parijada tree, all the other facilities, what they had there. They wanted to enjoy all that. And same time, Srimad Bhagavatam also, let me have that also along with it. So they go, Swami said, no, that's not possible. To have Bhagavatam, you have to give up all that things. So as far as Sukadeva Goswami is concerned, they were not ready for Srimad Bhagavatam. And they've also mentioned that Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, like Parikshit has heard, is not enough. Is not enough. Why? All the instructions what Bhagavatam has given to us, if you are not following that, nothing will happen. And these demigods, they don't want to follow anything. They just want to take Bhagavatam and go. Hear Bhagavatam and go back. They are not ready to practice what Bhagavatam is telling us to do. Bhagavatam is telling us to do. So therefore, Sukadeva Goswami says, they are not ready for Bhagavatam. They are not ready for Srimad Bhagavatam. Then Sukadeva Goswami did not like them putting a price for Srimad Bhagavatam. Nobody can give a price for Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna himself. Can you price Krishna? So, how can you price Krishna? So, this attitude of giving a value for Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami could not appreciate that. So, Sukadeva Goswami thought that swartham. Swartham means selfishness. So, he said there in that time, these demigods, they are swarthi. In other words, they are selfish. Their motive is selfishness. They are not qualified to have Srimad Bhagavatam. And it is that Srimad Bhagavatam what we have got through the mercy of Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit. So, while reading Srimad Bhagavatam, we must respect Bhagavatam from all these angles. We must recognize that we are not studying a very ordinary literature. Bhagavatam is Krishna. When we understand deeper into Srimad Bhagavatam, you will appreciate Krishna's presence in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We will discuss next Sunday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.